There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And the phone number, text line, you need to know that. You need to put that in your contacts at 343-0106. Just put FM Talk 106.5 and 343-0106. And yeah, that works for your call. We'd love to hear your voice. If you don't have time or you're trying to do this on the down lower, you can always send us a text, 343-0106. All right. Hey, my buddy Bill Finch joins me in hour number two of the show. We'll be talking with him about, it's interesting, something that we did not talk about this beforehand, but we were both very interested in this experimental hemp farming going on in the state of Alabama right now. And, you know, I'm looking at it as an ag guy and guy that's interested in new things in the agricultural front. I know there's a couple, at least two listeners to the station that are growing it experimentally this year under the Department of Agriculture. And I'm kind of just interested how it grows, you know, how fast, what kind of fertilizer, all that kind of stuff. Bill Finch's take on it was one of many, but he said the idea that hemp is going to save Alabama farmers is a foolish one. So he's going to join me coming up at 1 o'clock, and we're going to talk more about this. And I'd love to hear from you as well as we talk about. I think there's over 100 different farms in the state that are taking advantage of this and trying to grow it. And then the state is monitoring how it works, how it doesn't work. Will this be another big crop for the state of Alabama, or is this just a flash in the pan? So we'll talk about that coming up this hour. As I mentioned this morning, in our conversation about tolling and the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, that we talk more about this and more information. And we'll talk about the general idea and the talk of tolls, but Kevin Spriggs joins us again from StopTheBaywayToll.com. Is that right? StopTheToll.com. StopTheToll.com. Like I told you, I think your title's better than Jim's, okay? I'm trying to start in trouble. Just think your branding's better. All right. And I want to talk about this, number one, the overall subject, but number two, this subject has come up a couple times on the show, and we've done a lot of, well, that doesn't sound good. You have sat down, and y'all have looked at the numbers, and the numbers behind this being what it cost and what it cost to pay back that cost to build a bridge and expanded bayway and that kind of stuff, right?
Well, Sean, you look at it as a, you know, what if I had a business project that was $2 billion? You know, how much would that actually cost me? How would I finance that, and what kind of interest payments would I have to make on, you know, an investment like that? And so we, you know, starting with ALDOT numbers of $6 toll, 80,000 cars a day, 55 years, we're calculating a payback of about $10 billion in total. And to me, that just seems really, really high because, if you pay the mortgage on your house according to the terms of the finance over 30 years, you generally would pay back about double the cost of your house if you make all your payments on time. That would be your principal and your interest.
Quit reminding me of that depressing stat.
Yeah, so when we look at, when we do the numbers that ALDOT's presenting and we come up with a $10 billion number, that just seems like something is not correct. And during the comment periods and the public meetings that ALDOT had, they talk about having a toll and the public-private partnership, but I never saw, and maybe it was there and I just missed it, but I never saw an actual business model as to why the toll had to be $6 to pay back a $2 billion project. Now, if you run standard business calculations, let's just say you had to go to your bank and you're able to get a business loan in the 4%, 5% range,
mm-hmm.
we calculate that a toll of $2.66 would actually pay for the $2 billion, and what it would also be, that toll would be fixed for the entire life of the project, because you'd be getting an interest rate return on it. So we just
let's go back and set up, if people, you know, and you've been following this from day one, mm-hmm. if you're just joining us, Kevin Spriggs, Spriggs Enterprises, on with us talking about the toll and the projected cost of the Bayway project. But the idea is that you have a certain amount of federal, which is still in question, certain amount of state in question, and then the rest of this private concessionaire coming in, putting this money in to build the project. Okay, this payback would happen over 55 years. They'd be able to raise the going forward, the cost of the toll by some, I mean, there's a formula to it, right?
Well, that we don't understand. Why would a toll need to be indexed if the money is provided up front?
Well, okay, if the project's $2.4 billion, okay, so I guess let's go back to the beginning here. So if the project costs $2.4 billion, and let's just for the sake of argument say the private concessionaire is going to pay the whole thing, but just do that, which they're not, but they pay the whole thing, then they have to have some rate of return, right?
That's
correct. You said you use four to...
Well, normally in the business world, if an S&P 500 company were to do a bond issue,
mm-hmm.
Bond issues would have a return of, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5%, just depending on what the activity the company was engaged in and how mm-hmm. successful that the bond rating agencies would rate that. And for the use of the bridge, if, you know, you see from your own numbers that, you know, people are willing to pay something, you mm-hmm. know, $1, $2. And I would say $2 in the $2 range is reasonable, because that's about what a gallon of gas costs.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to pay that anyway.
Right.
You know, to whether the bridge is free or not.
That's right.
Because you're going to have some cost of transportation. But
sure.
It just has to be reasonable. No one would use a credit card and pay 20 or 30% to go finance the mortgage on their house. But what it looks like to me that this thing is, since it appears to be a very, you know, a very financially attractive investment that maybe outsiders have gotten wind of it, and now we seem to have something that has a unstoppable momentum, because, you know, people that gain, you know, if you're going to make $10 billion on a $2 billion investment, I mean, you know, it surprises me that the oil companies aren't trying to build this bridge.
Right. Well, okay. And that's what I want to get into. So if people, some people hear it exactly what you're saying, but to put it in Sullivanese for me, that at let's say at $2.60-something, you said that
$2.60.
Okay,
have a down payment in there, just like
right.
You have to make a down payment on your house, and that down payment should be, you know, we think at least $400 million, because that's what the down payment on the I-59, I-20 bridge is in Birmingham. So
right.
The state should be willing to provide at least that much.
Yeah, we want to avoid PMI on this, right? We don't have to have private mortgage insurance. But
that's
no, so,
right.
So we enter into this, and this is what I'm getting at. So if 266, there, that number of 266, that means that 4 to 5%.
Correct.
Then if we're talking, then $6 toll, now there are some unknown factors, how many people go across, how many days, all that, but they've given us calculations on how many they think. At $6, essentially, we're paying 15%+ interest on this loan?
It would actually be probably in the 6 to 8% if you actually did a present value calculation on it. But what that tells me is that puts it in the territory of hedge fund managers.
High risk.
And sovereign governments, people that want to invest at a high rate of return.
But for a high rate of return, you take a lot of risk.
That's
but this
right.
project, so where, but where's the risk in this project? I mean, if I'm buying some Bitcoin, or if I'm buying an overseas stock, yes, I have a chance of a great return. I also have a chance of losing my tail end
mm-hmm.
in a bridge that is on a federal interstate. It doesn't seem like that fits the definition of a risky proposition.
No, it doesn't. And furthermore, the calculation that we ran is based on, you know, using standard business finances if, you know, I had to go to the bank to borrow the money. But actually, projects like this often are done on tax-exempt bonds, you know, and with tax-exempt bonds, the interest rate is actually lower because, you know, the people that are investing need to defer some of their income right. tax or use it as a tax shelter. And so the possibility of getting even lower than 4% finance could actually be out there. You know, so we, you know, I'm not saying I'm an expert at this type of high-level finance. I mean, I've financed in my business before, mm-hmm. and that's a totally different league of finance than this is. But it's just that, you know, the numbers as presented look like an extreme level of return for whoever would be making the investment. And I just, you know, maybe, you know, we definitely need the project, but are we desperate enough that we'd...
We're willing to pay
those kind of return rates to get it.
All right, coming right back, more with Kevin Spriggs, the website stopthetoll.com. We'll take your questions as well on the text line and the phone line, 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1220, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Kevin Spriggs, guest in studio, stopthetoll.com. And moving on, and we'll go back. We can talk about all aspects of this. But, you know, we've talked specifically about the toll amounts and what people will tolerate. But y'all have gone a step in here, which I appreciate, and looked at the actual numbers of, okay, if the toll is $6, if it's $2.66, if it's $3, if it's $4, what this rate of return is on investment. Because that's what we're getting into, right? This is when we talk about the consortium, the private group getting together. People are risking capital, you know, in this project with some hope of return. But this seems like, if there was ever a cherry deal, if I called you up and said, Kevin, I got us a cherry deal, we're going to be building an adjunct, an expansion to a existing federal assets, interstate.
Well, it's a business that is already in use, you know.
Yeah,
we have a bridge.
I can show you the numbers. I'll show you the books. Here's the books. There's, you know, 80,000 cars travel this
That's
and that.
Right. Yeah, we looked that up this weekend on the Aldot's website. There's, you know, this is not a risky asset in that, well, I have a new product, no one's going to use it or they won't like it.
Right.
No, this is something that's a proven asset where, you know, already 80,000 cars a day are using it. And what you're going to do is, you know, maybe increase the capacity by a factor of two. So 80,000 cars is just kind of like a baseline number to be conservative in estimating what the returns are going to be.
It's not like the asset... It's not like there's competition. I mean, you and I both were talking during the break as private businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's not a chance that they're going to build another I-10 right by, and your I-10 is going to be the old I-10. Everybody's going to be loving the new I-10.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to
That's correct. You know, for me, if I build a gas station, I do have to worry if I'm in the perfect location because somebody might build across the street from me, and then now that's competition. But here, this is a unique asset. You're going to have a monopoly because this is part of the interstate highway system. It's a very unique asset, and there's no bypass in it unless, you know, some... I mean, I can't imagine what entity could come in and build a competitive structure.
No, I don't either.
And with, you know, so
maybe one day we'll have jetpacks like the Jetsons and be flying across the bay. But until then,
well, I thought about the guy building the tunnels out in Seattle, Elon Musk. He's
right.
got a, but I don't know if that works in Mobile Bay River mud. So, you know, it's a proven asset. So business wise. You know, the risk is not that great. And that tells me that the interest rate should be in the normal range of, you know, 3-5%. If it were financed with tax-free bonds, that interest rate would drop down to about 2%.
So tax-free bonds, proven asset without the fear of competition, and federal government backing because it's a federal interstate.
Correct.
If anything would lay out something that would be a safe investment and one that would require a lower rate of interest, you just defined it. I'm going to grab some calls here and text. Jeff is in Baldwin County. You're on with Kevin Spriggs.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Good, man.
Just fine.
A little background. I've been in construction for 46 years. I've worked for some bridge builders in the past. I've got a building science degree from Auburn and a master's in finance from Georgia Tech. So
wow.
I kind of
cool.
work okay. size and fence here. But you're talking, but before I get to my primary questions, a comment about the interest rates, and that is when you sell a bond, you sell that bond for what you think. They're going to bid those bonds at what they think the interest rate ought to be. And historically, the interest rates we're seeing right now are historically very low. And the truth of the matter is, over the life of that bond, the interest rates we have today, if it's a 50-year bond, might account for maybe 25% of it. So historically, you're looking at 6-9% interest rates on bonds. And that's probably where somebody who's going to put up $1 billion is going to price that bond at. So, you know, you may have a coupon that pays 3 or 4% or whatever, but when they go to buy those bonds, they're going to price it at what they think the average interest rate is going to be over the next, you know, 20, 25 years before they sell that bond to somebody else.
But in that time period, let me, and then we get, won't that, I could talk to somebody with the finance degree forever. I have so many questions. So, but there's going to be a variant, right? I mean, it's not going to stay at one level. That climb over time is going to be made of peaks and valleys, correct?
Right. They're looking for the average or a little above average. So, you know, in the years when the interest rates get up, they're not getting hurt as bad. And the only way to do that is to make money when the interest rates are low. So they're going to price those bonds over, say, a 20-year period. Well, and they're going to price that return when they bid on those bonds at probably 6 to 8%.
Well, and I would also indicate that, you know, the normal range of financing is a 30-year, and 30-year is pretty common. And when you get into government agencies that are involved, then those interest rates tend to be lower. And I would just indicate to you, like, the 30-year mortgage is, you know, would be certainly higher risk than this project. And so if I were financing on a 30-year range, would I expect to get the same return as a 30-year mortgage? Maybe.
What is the lifespan of a 30-year mortgage in today's economy? 10 years before somebody sells out, moves on, something like that?
Well, that's generally true. Most people don't ride their 30-year mortgage all the way to the end. They usually take advantage of interest rates, and they're also encouraged by short-term rates being lower than the 30-year rate. So a lot of people take that risk thinking that, well, I'm only going to live here 3 to 5 years because of my career might make me have to move, or I just take the lower payment now and maybe I'll move out. And
right, but this bridge is not nearly as mobile as...
No.
So let me ask the two questions I called in about. Number one is, what's going to happen with the current I-10 when this bridge is complete?
Kevin, I mean, you asking me...
Well, if the project's executed as proposed, the current I-10, you get more lanes on the bridge. The bridge deck gets raised. The capacity, I'm not really sure what the capacity increase is, but it looks like it could be an almost double in the capacity. In other words, you could go to a structure that could support 150,000 cars a day as opposed to the current 80.
Okay, so that brings me to the next question, and that's a really good point there about traffic. What are you going to do with the tunnel when you get off of the bridge? You have a choke point at one end of that thing going in and going out. It's like a pipe.
Kevin, you want to address that?
Well, in the plan that ALDOT presented, they also are including an overhaul of the exits that are west of the tunnel, the existing tunnel.
And, they're going to expand the capacity. They're not just moving the bottleneck. They're expanding capacity on...
That's right.
Yeah.
The existing bridge would be... I mean, the new bridge would be put into place. The existing tunnel would remain. So actually at the choke point there, you have actually two structures handling, you know, the additional traffic.
And aren't they moving just... I don't want to get back to the car, but aren't they also expanding on into Baldwin County with that expanded lanage?
That's correct. The expanded lane, the raised deck, is all the way to exit 35 in Baldwin County.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Jeff, go ahead.
So on the west side, where the raised deck comes in, are they going over the river with a bridge, another bridge? Or I'm just wondering what the percentage is of traffic that would use those new enlarged exits right at the end.
I don't know that. I mean, that's a question, probably a good question for ALDOT.
Well, in the minimum, I would say is you would still maintain at least the 80,000 cars a day that you have now.
Right.
And then as the economy grows, population grows, I would expect that to grow and not be capacity limited anymore once the existing, I mean, if the project as proposed is executed, I mean, it will generate, you know, a significant increase in capacity for the next 20, 30, 40 years.
I've been listening to y'all show talking about this for a while, and nobody's ever talked about what happens on that end of the bridge, so I was curious. And it just goes back to physics class in high school, volume equals pressure times area.
Sure it does. But they're expanding, the way I understand it, and is they are expanding the volume, right?
Correct.
So the pressure would be either the same or at the worst scenario, the same, or better in all other scenarios, because they would have a more volume of, let's say, a given concrete and asphalt square footage for that area. You know, and say there'd be more places to put more cars, Jeff, I guess.
Well, the issue, the area part of that equation is what happens at the west end where all that traffic hits that bridge and those exits. You know, and they're coming onto the bridge.
You know, they're picking up at Virginia, right? So the bridge picks up coming off at Virginia. People will have to make that decision there, and then you split the traffic.
And then the existing interchanges also get remodeled, and I mean, it'll be a significant improvement to that part of Mobile compared to what's there now.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for your time. Y'all have a good day.
Hey, I appreciate it, Ben. And interesting perspective from building and from finance. That's Jeff be a useful guy to have around and get Jeff's card, Matt.
Yep, we definitely need to help with the finance.
Can you hang on a second?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because we got the heartbreak here. But we'll go to that. We'll check in with Dr. Bill, get a weather update, which I can give you all the bad news right now if you want it. If you were wondering if it was going to be hot again today, I think last time I checked it was 97 at our studios. No, it's down. It's 95 now, so I get out and enjoy that. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, maybe it's already going on, or will be in the fall at Econ Finance classes, University of South Alabama, Spring Hill College, Mobile College. Maybe it'd be a neat thing. It got my attention up at the University of Alabama if they'd had a current project for us to be figuring out and learning from. Guest Kevin Spriggs from StopTheToll.com, and we're talking about another part, not just what you're paying in tolls or the proposed, but the financing and this private concessionaire. I want to read Steve's text real quickly here. Steve texted in. He said, I calculated based on the toll collection estimates at a $5 toll, the overall rate of return is 9.6%, and that is based only on the 30 years that the toll collection estimates are available for. Assume that federal loans and private equity bonds interest rates are less than that, then the private concessionaire is going to be making double-digit return. So, you know, and that's, you know, Jeff had some great thoughts on it, too, on the financing side. There's a lot of this, and it's good that people are looking into it, because there's a lot of this it's not that people are dumb. It's people are ignorant. They don't deal with, I mean, who deals with this kind of level of financing every day? Not many people.
That's correct. But this is, at that rate of return, that puts it in hedge fund territory. And that's what I'm personally afraid of, is that now that some of these outside operators have gotten wind of the project and maybe they think that we're very desperate for the project, that now that they will step in and actually actively try to cut off other potential ways of financing this project that are more traditional in terms of, you know, government work, you know, public works types projects.
Right. Question there. Who is that? Who do we know? I mean, we keep saying private concessionaire. Do we know the name? Is it a fund? Is it a group? Is it who is it?
Well, we definitely would like to shine some light in that area, because when you're talking about those types of rates of return and you're talking about that much in terms of the financing, then that has to come from Wall Street. It has to come from Connecticut, New York hedge funds, people that have access to that type of investment capital, and they do look for those types of rates of return. And,
sure, don't we all?
I mean, when I've run these numbers in front of other business people that I know, just to see if am I doing the calculations right, I say, oh man, that's a good deal. I'd like to maybe invest in a part of that myself.
Right. I mean, there's, yeah, if you got that kind of rate, I think you could maybe even
crowdsource this and we get, you know, everybody in the state of Alabama to pitch in, you know, $2,000, $3,000, and we'd all get a good return on that. What about the, and people are still asking, saying we shouldn't accept any tolls on the project. Okay. But let's talk about the component there. It just doesn't sound like at this point the federal money, maybe $171 million with that info grant. I got to ask this question, and I've asked it a couple of times. I don't get a lot of response here, but Senator Shelby, okay, he is the senior, our senior senator, and one of the senior senators in Washington. He's also head of appropriations. If we were ever going to have a chance to get somebody's ear for federal financing here, it should be now, right, Kevin?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as important of a project as this is, and in terms of, I mean, even all the things that are past our local issues, you know, the connectivity, the economy, the strategic value of having the military bases interconnected along the coast. I mean, all those aspects of this project put it in the, you know, in the responsibility area of the federal government. And, you know, it just, I maybe I don't watch the news enough. Maybe I don't listen to all the talk shows and such. But
as long as you listen to this one, you're good.
I mean, where is Senator Shelby on this? This is a very, very important issue.
This, I mean, I've said several times, I'm completely okay with calling it the Senator Richard Shelby Bridge, right? Are you comfortable with that?
Oh, yeah. We call it the Nancy Pelosi Bridge if she'll write a check for it. That's what I've said before.
Yeah.
But
the check isn't there. Yeah. And it's... And even in conversations I've had with others and State Senator Chris Elliott about it, that $171 million, which is like 7% of the entire project, is not a sure thing at this point either.
No.
This idea that when this all started, I know I've been talking about it long enough, that it was an 80-20 split. Feds 80, local, state, municipal kind of combination for 20%. We were worried back then how the heck we were going to come up with the 20%. Mm-hmm. Flip this thing around, federal funding has now gone to 7%.
Well, and traditionally that, you know, most of the interstate highway system was built this way. And I think we are in a unique area where that, you know, we have a very expensive part of that system that doesn't occupy a lot of our geography.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, the need is there. It should be a national priority to maintain the interstate highway system. But, you know, are we desperate enough to turn over a key asset like that to hedge fund managers? And I personally say no. We need to, you know, if the federal government's not ready to fund it adequately, then we need to look at what can we do with the money that we have. And, you know, it's just like if you wanted to buy a better car or a better truck, but you can't afford it right now, well, then mm-hmm. you can't afford it right now, and you have to mitigate your circumstances.
Right. And what you're bringing up, Kevin, just joining us, talking to Kevin Spriggs, stopthetoll.com. Can we say no at this point? What's your feel? Personal opinion? Is this train already left the station, or can we say no?
Well, I think if it were left up to the average person here, we would say no, let's wait till we can actually fund it. What I'm afraid of is that some financial interests outside the state, like I said, hedge funds, sovereign government investment funds, somebody that has smelled the money.
Yeah, I tell you what, you bring me that kind of rate of return, I'd be one of those people.
You know, I just hope that they haven't got behind the wheel and now we're pushing against them.
So that's a maybe?
That's a maybe. It's a conspiracy theory because we don't have any facts. But hey, let's have the facts about who is willing, you know, who is willing to fund this and why. What's the reason? And again, if we can't afford it right now, then maybe we need to wait, or maybe we need to look at alternatives and doing parts of the project that, I mean, the existing tunnel can still be improved, especially mm-hmm. if the curve on the west end is taken out.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the key sources of delays is that west end curve that's, you know, at the exit and entrance of the tunnel.
Yeah, and this is not one of those projects like, and I've seen some of the text people are like, well, we don't need it. In fact, we do need some improvement. If you must not drive back and forth if you don't think we need it. We do need some improvement. It's just, what does it look like and what can we afford? I mean, people will argue that if we wait, and I've said, hey, why don't we wait and just cool our jets for a second? They say, well, we're already, you know, 20 years behind in what we need to do, and so we should get started now. I would turn the argument around and say, well, is two more years over 20 or over 30 years, what does it matter at this point? But yeah, if there was something, I talked about it this morning that I have not seen, and I don't know if it's possible to see, something everybody knows. When you go to get health insurance, right, in the state of Alabama, there's a bronze, there's a silver, and a gold plan. Like, you administer for a business, right?
Well, that's right.
You can do one of these three plans, and everybody's going to get the... I think we're looking at the gold plan.
Right.
Is there... Not saying they're not showing... Is there a silver plan? Is there a bronze plan? Is that possible, or is it so specific with doing work to a federal interstate? Because we have to comply with... Even though they're only paying maybe 7%, we have to comply with federal regulations. Mm. Is there a silver? Is there a bronze?
Well, if you ask the average guy on the street, you know, can I afford that $80,000 diesel-powered dually truck, or will I just do with my F-150?
Right.
The answer is he has to do with his F-150 because that's the only
thing
that's
actually
possible.
Right, but there's an option for us, right? We want to go get the one with leather, and we want to get the the fancy rims, and we want to get the bigger engine with the whole nine yards, but we know we can't afford it. So then we look over here at this part of the lot, where the truck we can afford is. Well, is there that other choices? It seems like it's this or nothing, and maybe that has to be, maybe there are good reasons for it has to be this or nothing, but I'm wondering, are there like, well, if we can't do this, here's how we could make it better, but it won't be $2.4 billion, it'll be $1 billion, or it'll be, you know, I don't know.
Well, it definitely has to be looked in terms of practicality. That's the decisions that every business makes every day. That's the decisions that families make all the time about how to conduct their own personal finances. And in this case, there are some obvious options. You know, eliminating that West End curve is one of the huge sources of delays and accidents that we encounter on the Bayway. And, you know, the other factor was, well, raising that bridge deck I believe it's 24 feet. That's a nice thing to have, but, you know, in my lifetime, we've never flooded in Mobile Bay to the extent that it would
it's a tough one.
And I'm with you,
mm-hmm. But at the same time, I go, they did lose it over Escambia. They did lose it over Pontchartrain. And I haven't seen it either. And I want to, part of me is just completely in line with you to say, because I ride across and go, man, the water's not going to get this high. And then you see things every day, you go, maybe I don't know, you know, what I think I know.
Yeah, with respect to nature, we just haven't been here very long
at
all.
Right, we are a blip. Hey, I want to talk on the politics side. Ben and Daphne said, along with Senator Shelby, where's Congressman Byrne on this issue? Wasn't that a big campaign issue he ran on? I don't know if it was... I know this. I'll say this before Kevin answers. I know that the first person that told me, watch, there's going to be a toll. This is not going to happen without a toll. They're going to bring a toll, was Congressman Byrne. He was on the show years ago with me. I mean, maybe as much as 2 years now, and said, well, not almost 2 years, year and a half. I mean, right after getting it off, and he said they're going to toll this thing. I mean, he said it right here on the show, and he said they're going to toll this thing, and then it kind of, oh well, you know, stuff goes by, and it comes out to be true. Have you heard? What about? Have you heard from Congressman Byrne?
Well, Congressman Byrne's office would definitely love to fund this, get this bridge funded through the national government. There's no doubt about that. And, I think what has happened with the toll was, well, people were thinking back in the days, well, we paid a quarter for the Bankhead Tunnel back mm-hmm. in the day. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think people were expecting this $6, you know,
what would that be in the
toll? I mean, you know.
With inflation, that would be interesting if we'd run that. And Dalton, if you did, it, what was a quarter? The Bankhead would have been in
about 1970 when I moved here. We were still paying a quarter, I believe.
Okay. So in 1970, Dalton, what's a quarter?
If it were six times, it'd be $1.25.
You think we've had?
I know from the 1980s, we're at least 400% in terms of consumer pricing.
Let's do this. Let's, because we got the break waiting for us. Let's run the break. Can you hold on?
Sure.
Okay, we'll do those. We'll do the math here during the break, or we'll let the calculator do the math during the break, and we'll come back with that. Also, question from Steve. This is interesting. What happens when they pass an infrastructure bill after the 2020 election that gives more federal funding to infrastructure projects, and we're stuck with this deal? Steve, that sounds like a great question because I've asked it a few times. Brilliant.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Guest Kevin Spriggs in from StompTheToll.com. Most of this information and a lot more over on the website. People can check it out. Okay, we're talking, we got the numbers back, and thank you for all the mathematicians out there. Dalton beat y'all, by the way, but all the people that lit me up on text and email and on text on my phone with the comparing 1970, so you were talking about a nickel for the Bankhead
when I moved here, yeah,
in 1970, a nickel for the, I mean, a quarter for the Bankhead would be $1.65 today.
Right.
So what if we were? What if they came back and said, "All right, we can do this and for $1.65 each way"? Do you think the some people's opinion would change?
My gut feeling is that once the toll gets above the cost of a gallon of gasoline, then it starts to have sort of a psychological effect on people that where, well, I could do this, but I'm going to do that instead. People mm-hmm. start making that decision. To take an alternative, and then of course that could hurt the return on a toll, on what the toll providers or the concessionaires would have. But if we take a standard finance approach and not use hedge fund money and not use sovereign wealth or foreign government money and et cetera, we just use what our businesses use today, commercial financing, or either go to the tax-free bond market, this project could be paid off in 30 years. Potentially
versus the 55,
and and then at that point, do you continue the toll or not? But we don't have the toll on the Bankhead Tunnel today because obviously what was used to finance it, the tolls and other opportunities, it ended up paying itself out, I guess.
Well, there's two parts to this. There's the actual recouping the money to build a tunnel or a bridge, and then there's the second part, which is the maintenance going forward. Bankhead Tunnel is maintained by ALDOT, right? Or probably by, or maybe by the, I don't know if it's ALDOT and the city and county or one, or
not really sure. We know that that's U.S. Highway 90 though that right. runs through there, so it is a federal highway. So how that factors in as far as maintenance and what ALDOT gets paid for maintenance, I don't know. But at the same time, we're running our numbers with the 80,000 cars a day on a structure that's going to have potentially double the capacity, and we don't expect the population to continue to, we expect the population to increase, we expect our economy to grow, so ours was just at fixed at 80,000 cars a day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you end up getting 120,000-130,000 cars a day's worth of tolls, then the project could pay out sooner. But this deal where we allow somebody to have a toll that's indexed to inflation for 55 years, that's just absurd, really. I think, and I really don't understand why state officials would entertain something that just is so absurd.
But you use the word, and I think this is what bothers me, too. It seems desperate. It seems people will take an interest rate that's high or a deal that's not good when they're desperate.
Well, Sean, it's either desperate or it's opportunistic from the other side. In other words,
right, but there just takes two to tango. We have to be desperate for the opportunistic side, right? I mean, you have to be you have to be willing to have a willing party to engage in the deal to have somebody else come in and say, "I'll take that deal."
That's right. I mean,
that means somebody else at a lower rate didn't step up and say they'll take that deal.
But in terms of the way that corporate interests influence government, it's not necessarily a desperation factor as it is.
Where do you think that influence is? Is it at the state level? Is it at the federal level or the local level? Where do you think that is coming in?
It's hard to say. If federal funding is being denied, then you have to wonder if some interest in Washington is active part of that. Hey, don't worry about funding that. We got this with our little private concerns. I mean, is that happening in the halls of Congress right now? I couldn't tell you. That's being conspiracy theorists, mm-hmm. But our press and our media needs to go after that. Let's find out what is the motivation of people that want to participate in this project.
Well, I hope it would be.
And is which end of which end of the dog is wagging the tail. You know, we don't know at this point. But,
right.
But we're definitely seem to be blocked from federal funding. And Montgomery, I don't know what's going on there as to why that they feel like, well, this is the only way we can finance this, and this is the only way we can do the project. Then, you know, it's just hard to say what is going on that side of the equation.
Yeah, to me, the worry would always be at government. The private concern doesn't bother me because I understand their motivations, which are good motivation to get the best return on capital possible. That's why you unlock the door every day. I get why you do that. Mm-hmm. But when that money has influence outside of the free market is when you bring government in the mix. And that is a concern if that can be shown. I'm told by many that the reason the federal money, we don't get as much attention is we cry about our traffic here, and they look at Atlanta or Houston or, L.A. or New York and say, y'all don't have problems.
Well, that's definitely an outsider's point of view, and it may be the what I call the North Alabama view of South Alabama. Well, we're not driving in that traffic. That's right. Y'all's problem. Y'all solve it on your own. but
they sure do take that 6% sales tax from down here, don't they?
Well, they take that, and they didn't install toll scanners on their own highway improvement projects either.
That's right, because we always get voted down in Montgomery.
Correct.
All right, Kevin, remind folks the website.
StopTheToll.com.
All right, and the link's there if they've got questions.
That's right. They can contact us, and we'd always be glad to have some extra support to, publicize what we're doing.
All right, very good. Kevin Spriggs, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right, coming back, so maybe the state of Alabama will make so much money farming hemp that we can finance the... What? The bridge project? What? No? This is a conversation Bill Finch and I are going to bounce this ball back and forth here in just a second. Y'all stay close.